The Free for All Roundtable.
Round two.
Rob Davis is here, former city councilor, founder of Rob Davis and Associates. It's a very jaunty scarf you've got going there.
Well, thank you very much. I thought I'd try to live up to your sartorial standards.
I'm wearing a t-shirt.
Exactly.
Okay. Michelle Morrow is here, a music teacher, People's Voice Award winner. Bob Richardson chortling in the background. He's senior counsel at National Public Relations. And Bob, I was at Jim Warren's birthday on Friday. I saw you, but then I made an Irish exit and we never talked.
And I made an Irish exit too as well. I was only there for about 45 minutes. It was a great event.
It was, yeah. All right, let's start with the carbon tax rebate checks start arriving today. I feel that the tide has sort of shifted in the whole carbon tax debate. I don't think it's reversed itself. But Bob Richardson, do you think anybody waking up to money in their bank today is going to go, "Ah, oh, I get it. This is great"?
No. Look, I think it's good policy, but I think it's been a bad program. I think it's been poorly communicated. It's convoluted. For instance, like small businesses, they're supposed to get a rebate. That hasn't happened in 5 years. So there's a number of administrative things to do with this program that's been a bit inexcusable in my point. But at the end of the day, you know, the price on carbon is happening all over the world. 36 different countries are putting a price on carbon. The program itself works. It makes sense. It's a shame that we'll probably end up throwing this out because it's been poorly administered.
Okay. So let's turn to Michelle Morrow. Did you check your bank account this morning?
Unfortunately, it goes to my husband. So I don't see any of it.
How very 1920s of you.
I know. We are one of those weird couples where we still have separate accounts and like what we pay for. But I'm very much like, "Hey, I need money." Or he'll be like, "Hey, I need money." So it works. We're very symbiotic in that relationship. But at the same time, I'm like, "Damn it, I don't get to see the benefits of this." But I agree with Bob. There's just the communication around it is really not clear at all. And for me, I don't mind paying extra for things if I know where that money is going. So for there not to be a release every year of like, "Hey, this is what carbon prices was. This is what the carbon tax did. This is why you're receiving this much as a rebate." I think that would have been really helpful to sort of offset the anger, because right now people, I honestly don't think people understand how the program works, and people being myself included.
No, go ahead. Well, no, I agree entirely, although I know how the tax works, and having got a car that's partly electric now, I'm one of the spoiled rotten people who's going to turn a profit. Rob Davies.
Well, you know, the tax rebate, people aren't stupid. They know at the end of the year when they file their income taxes and they get a tax refund, it means they overpaid throughout the 12 months prior to filing their income tax return. So yes, it's good to get a tax refund, but it just means that every 2 weeks when I got my paycheck, I overpaid the government of Canada in tax and I had to do an RSP contribution or put my money in a place that offered me, you know, some tax relief in order to get my money back. So a carbon tax rebate just means that people overpaid for gas, heating oil, natural gas to heat their home, and food. That's all it means, and they know that. And that's the problem with this program, is people understand that it's something that they paid for a 12-month period, or if they're getting it quarterly, whatever the numbers are, that they're overpaying during that period of time.
Young Canadians, apparently, in a related story, are turning away from the Liberals and toward Pierre Poilievre's Conservatives. Rob Davis, it's just, you know, it's the natural, the going down of the sun and the rising up in the morning. I mean, this is bound to happen.
Well, you know, Pierre Trudeau is kind of like a...
Justin Trudeau.
Oh, sorry. Did I say Pierre Trudeau?
Yes, you did.
Oh, my God. Now I'm aging myself. Well, sorry. So Justin Trudeau is aging out, as it were. You know, like he's like a Leonardo DiCaprio girlfriend. At some point, voters have decided, you know, I'm just not into him anymore. He's not as young and good looking as he used to be. And perhaps I'm going to go for a newer, younger model. And that's sort of what's happening from a political realm perspective. They're no longer enamored with his haircut. And they're starting to realize realize that the economy doesn't just fix itself, and it doesn't, you know, fix. You don't fix the economy from the heart out. You actually have to make hard decisions. You have to understand monetary policy, fiscal policy, and you have to do that in the context of, you know, managing a G7 country in the context of a global economy. And I think people are starting to understand that being cool, being the cool kid in school, isn't as important as having somebody who maybe is the nerdy kid who's going to start Microsoft. And so this is what's happening. I think we're getting, people are starting to be attracted to the nerdy kid in school and not the cool kid in school.
And although he's trying really hard to be the cool kid, isn't he?
Well, the nerdy kids need to try.
The fan artwork on social media is becoming a bit much. I don't know if you've seen the shirtless renderings of Pierre Poilievre.
No, I haven't. Yeah. Not yet. Well, I'll look forward to that.
Michel Moreau, I absolutely believe that people are gravitating toward the conservatives. It's a pretty clear trend. At the same time, I'm counting the days to when I will once again say, meet the new ratbag administration, same as the old ratbag administration.
That's a wonderful comparison. I like it. Yeah, I think we're getting to the point where you just feel the tides are turning. And I think we felt the same thing at the end of the Stephen Harper tenure, where we could just feel like things were changing. I don't know if people were really on board with Trudeau at that point, but you just felt like the conservatives were going to be unelected, for lack of a better term. But I like what Rob said about being in the schoolyard. But to me, Pierre Poilievre is not the nerd. He's the bully. He's the kid who, like, never misses the chance to take a low blow. He's the kid who will side with anyone who thinks will give him power. And that's my worry about him. As much as I don't want the Liberals back in power, I don't know if I can vote for someone who I honestly don't think he believes in what he says, and he could change his vote at any minute.
Bob Richardson, your thoughts?
I think that the real problem here is that we haven't got a lot done in housing for over 30 years under five or six prime ministers. Trudeau's wearing it now, but that's the truth of the matter. And part of the problem is the way Ottawa is structured. It's structured for an agrarian state of 100 years ago. It's not a modern government. Getting a passport is an epic thing that you know, a process to get done. For young people, the tax structure isn't great. Tech policy isn't great. Public transit isn't great, et cetera, et cetera. It needs to be updated, and it needs to get out of this old agrarian way of thinking of 100 or 125 years ago to become relevant, because Ottawa today does almost nothing for young people.
The leader of the Parti Québécois says he's going to, if elected, he'll call a third referendum. Michel Moreau kind of reminds me, when my brother was a kid, he had a habit of knocking his head on the concrete outside of the house. And one day he was on his way out the front door, and my mother said, "You're going to bang your head on the pavement?" And he said, "Yes, I am." And she said, "Go ahead."
And he did. Yeah. If it makes you feel better, then why not? I feel the same way. I feel like it's a futile effort. I don't think it's going to pass, but it gives him a sense perhaps of purpose. Maybe it's his way that he can bring the party together, give them something to focus on. But I think it's futile. I don't think it'll ever pass.
Yeah. Bob Richardson, you'd think, you know, I mean, I guess it's going to be three strikes and you're out.
Yeah. I'm a Quebecer, so I take interest in this story, but a third referendum, it's kind of like discussing the Abro Arrow or like a hula hoop factory. Like, it's ridiculous. It's dated. It's from another era. It's kind of irrelevant. What Quebec needs to be focused on is economic development, harnessing Montreal's diversity, and using Montreal as a weapon, as opposed to hampering it like the government in Quebec City does all the time with Montreal. So that's what they ought to be focused on, not another ridiculous referendum.
Rob Davis?
I still remember, even though I was young, when the PQ got elected as a provincial government, the banks lined up the armored trucks and they moved the money from Montreal to Toronto. As a Torontonian, I welcome a Quebec referendum. It's going to mean jobs, hope, and opportunity for those of us in Ontario and particularly in the GTA. But as a patriot, I think it's a dumb thing. I, as I like to say, my Canada includes Quebec. My radio station includes Quebec. I think it's an ill-founded idea. They should get on, as Bob is suggesting, with economic development, harnessing the talent pool that they have. Look for ways, you know, and I know Quebec is a very special place in the Canadian Confederation. Look for ways to attract more investment from the Francophonie community. That's fantastic. They got to do that. But a threat of a referendum made me chuckle. And I think they're ill-advised if they continue down that road. That's all I can say. And, you know, Toronto should start running ads attracting Quebecers to relocate.
Yeah. Although they'll probably go to Alberta, ironically enough.
Well, that's why we need to run the ads.
Yeah. Okay. I always say Toronto is to Montreal what Miami is to Havana. You know, Toronto is full of people who are still angry, but they left.
Exactly.
Opioids now responsible for one in every four young deaths. And Bob Richardson, I'll start with you on this one. Beyond distressing, and I was offering a few minutes ago, and like I said, it sounds like a crass observation, but I thought that opioid deaths would taper off because we would run out of people who are using illegal drugs, but that's not happening.
Yeah, it continues to be an epidemic, and an epidemic in kind of certain regions too as well. One in four deaths is crazy, but you know, I think those who have allowed this explosion to happen still haven't paid a price, and that's big pharma companies that were really pushing this, some doctors that were being used by agents of big pharma companies to push this, et cetera. Those people have not really had their day in court, and that needs to happen. I think as long as there's no penalty for the activities that have gone on, we can expect this to continue.
Rob Davis.
I couldn't have said it better myself, Bob. Listen, Purdue Pharma, the Sackler family, the pieces of you-know-who who knowingly prescribed these drugs, knowing that it was addictive, knowing the effects that it would have, they need to be drawn and quartered in the public square. They need to pay a price, and because the profits that they made far exceed any penalty that they've had to pay thus far. I mean, when you extract billions and billions of dollars from the financial markets as a result of sales from opioids, knowing that you're destroying communities and lives and killing people, then you need to make sure that not only do those profits go back to help restore some of the damage that you've done, but there need to be punitive damages. You need to suffer so that nobody else is encouraged to do this type of malfeasance ever again.
Okay. Last word, Michelle Morrow.
I totally agree with both of them, but that will not solve the problem at home. We need to have more direct communication with kids growing up, telling them what's happening, if you take these kind of drugs. This needs to be in every classroom. It needs to be talked around at every dinner table. And we need more proof that safe injection sites are working, because all they're doing right now is angering people and making the drugs more readily available.
Thank you all. Good to have you. Michelle Morrow, Rob Davis, and Bob Richardson.
Catch the Roundtable, round one at 7:45, round two at 8:45. Weekday mornings on More in the Morning. News Talk 1010, Toronto.